Some very sobering news out of a new AusDoc survey. The Royal Australian College of General Practitioners is warning that more and more GPs plan to reduce their hours or leave the profession entirely. It's very, very sobering indeed. And I guess we all know some of the challenges that our GP clinics are facing. Very, very difficult to get an appointment, certainly get an appointment in quick time. To have a bit of a chat about this new survey, some suggestions certainly about how we need to address it, as well as a couple of other topics, we're very lucky to grab a few minutes with a very, very busy Professor Karen Price. She is President of the Royal Australian College of GPs, and she joins me now. Look, let's just go through some of these results. 43% of GPs surveyed said they would be reducing their hours without some significant change in general practice. Wow, that's quite a staggering number.
It is a staggering number, and it's a very concerning number. As well as that, we have a pipeline issue with new young doctors not wishing to come into the profession in the numbers that they used to come in, and older doctors bringing forward their retirement. So, and the interesting thing is there's a paradox in one of our surveys, which is that 70% of the doctors we surveyed, over 3,000 doctors, and they were saying, well, we actually really like our job. So it's about the workplace and what's happened with the government neglect of the general practice sector.
And wow, 28% of respondents to this new AusDoc survey said they had already quit the profession and they had plans to find a new career or plan to retire within 12 months. You mentioned there that young doctor graduates just do not want to go into the GP field. I mean, what are they doing otherwise, first of all, and why are those other pathways more attractive than being a GP?
Well, there's a number of reasons that they don't get a lot of exposure to general practice. They've seen the disrespect with which the profession has been treated. They're coming out of medical school these days a lot older with more hex debts and so forth, and they need to manage those. They're also coming out at a time when they might be starting their families. And general practice has no entitlements, so there's no sick leave, there's no holiday pay or parental leave. So for many of them, we've got a lot of women entering the profession, staying in the hospital wards, they get all of the hospital awards and parental leave. So there's a whole lot of considerations, but you can't be what you can't see. And so we do have a job, and in terms of getting general practitioners into the medical schools and into hospital situations. But I would say it's basically disrespect with which the profession's been treated for the last couple of decades.
It's very, very scary stuff. What's the future here? If things don't turn around and turn around fairly quickly, what's the landscape going to look like? What's the impact on us as patients if we don't reverse this terrible trend?
Patients will have worse outcomes and worse care. And this is a case in point. We look at the US system where they spend a lot more of the taxpayer dollar on medical care, but they have much worse outcomes in terms of lifetime morbidity and mortality, that is the illness outcomes as well as death. And we all know that the academic work is that any system that pivots back to general practice and primary care does much better. Denmark did this, and they spend 15% of their health budget on general practice. In Australia, it's only 7.4%.
Wow.
And Denmark, by doing that, were able to close hospitals. Now, nobody really wants to go to hospital. If you can do a preventative care have an earlier diagnosis, you're going to not only save your life, but save a whole world of trouble in terms of chronic illness.
And the long-term benefits and savings to us as taxpayers, apart from the health outcomes, surely it saves the government in the long run.
Yeah, there's the World Health Organization has called general practice primary care the best bang for buck. And there's no economist that can disagree with that. It's well established. So, it's just that general practice is sometimes a bit hard to understand because a lot of people say, oh, the doctor didn't give me antibiotics. Well, that's actually good practice.
Yes.
Or the doctor didn't do much, but we actually excluded a whole lot of other things. And we brought through the person who actually needs to come through. So there's a whole lot of diagnostic skill. And we diagnose across the whole spectrum of human presentation. So, we diagnose in every category, whether it's cardiology, gastroenterology, psychiatry or dermatology. So, and we bring forward those who need to come forward. So, it's quite a complex profession. And of course, we see people from little babies right through to end of life.
Paint a picture, if you can, of the general life of a GP. There's some findings in that report about burnout is becoming a huge, huge issue. I mean, what is a day in the life of a GP like? We hear about the outcome for patients or the challenges for patients in finding appointments and whatnot, but what about from the GP's perspective?
The GP's point of view, it's a very high-pressure job. We have, you know, most of us will have 15-minute appointments all day. We are usually running late because sometimes people present with something that takes a lot longer, or we'll have someone who's in a whole lot of distress from a mental health point of view. And so we're not going to say, well, sorry, you've got to stop crying now, you have to get out of the room, or sorry, we can't examine that lump in your abdomen because you've got to get out. So there's all that pressure, and then we often end up eating our lunch at the computer and over lunch checking results, and then most doctors these days will tell you they've got an hour or two of paperwork after every session to follow up and make sure things are correct. So, and we know that the reception staff are under a lot of pressure with people trying to get in, so we do try and triage people appropriately. So for a checkup, you might wait a week or two, but for something more urgent, we do try and bring you through more quickly.
Let's turn then to some potential solutions. What needs to happen to reverse this terrible trend?
Well, we need to look at the way the hospital system works and the way that general practice fits into that. So we need to have one health system rather than the hospital system not recognising general practice because it's state funded, whereas general practice is federal funded. So we need to make it one health system. And we need to have a better spend on general practice where we can have team-based care, so we can build better infrastructure in the community so that we've got larger practices, more teaching rooms, because that attracts new graduates. We want to have team-based care, so more allied health are involved in patients. So particularly for patients in low socioeconomic groups who often can't access a diabetes educator or a dietitian or an occupational therapist, unless they've got private health cover or unless they go on a long waiting list in a public hospital. We want to be able to treat the very disadvantaged patients, and this is part of what we call the moral hazard for doctors, where we are trained to a high degree. We know what this person needs, but we know they can't afford it and the system can't supply it. That's the burnout.
Talk a little bit now about the financial side of things. I know obviously it's, you know, it's about health outcomes and giving patients the best possible care, but there is also the reality, I guess the fiscal reality of being a GP, running a GP clinic. I mean, is it financially viable for GP clinics going forward?
Well, in the Health of the Nations report, 50% of GPs felt it was not financially sustainable on Medicare rebates. And 70% of practice owners are worried about the long-term sustainability of their practices. So we've got to, out of that Medicare rebate, it's got to come all the practice income for paying the nurses, the lights, the computers, all the equipment, the building and so forth. So a lot of people think that just goes straight into the doctor's pocket. That's not the case. It has to pay for the whole setup of
That's
the business.
Right.
And then there's the medical insurances and so forth and the ongoing education. So there's a lot of cost in running a medical practice. And we know that, for instance, walking through an ED door, it costs the taxpayer over $550. And compared to the $39 that you get in a general practice. So if ED costs the taxpayer $500 and something, how is it that general practice can somehow seem to run on $39?
Are you getting a hearing? Are you getting the ear of this new Albanese government on some of these matters?
Look, I've been pleased to see that they are. Minister Butler has over and over again affirmed his commitment to general practice. However, we've also heard, oh, things are very tight. And what I've been saying was, well, wait till they get tighter if you ignore this problem. This problem cannot roll down the hill anymore. We cannot kick this can down the road anymore. If this doesn't change very quickly, we're going to have a really big issue on our hands with ongoing costs into the hospital system, which the country will not be able to afford. So if there's not money for general practice, then we're in really big trouble.
You're hearing from Professor Karen Price. She is president of the Royal Australian College of GPs. Do you reflect on what you've just said there, all of those challenges facing the GP sector? Your health sector colleagues in pharmacies seem to be on enjoying a bit of a better run, if I could put it that way, certainly in the last 24 hours or so. It's been confirmed here in Queensland that that controversial scope of practice pilot trial, where pharmacists have been able to not only prescribe medicines as they normally would, they're now also able to diagnose a whole range of conditions. It's been extended, it's been made permanent after so many concerns were raised by your team at the RACGP, as well as, of course, the AMA, among others. Your reaction, Professor Price, to that news in the last day or so?
Well, it's an insult to patients because GPs are trained to 10 to 12 years of training to do differential diagnosis. Pharmacists are excellent professionals, but they're not trained to the level that we are trained. And we have many pharmacists who are now retrained as doctors, and they are most concerned because they say you don't know what you don't know. We've got documented evidence from the AMA that there are many serious conditions that have been missed just with a urinary tract infection trial. So I can't imagine how it's going to be with this. And I'm also very concerned that lobbying seems to pay dividends when it comes to patient safety, and that really bothers me in terms of a political strategy, that somehow you can pay a political party some money and somehow or other you can bypass what we would consider safe patient practice. And so we'll be looking very closely at that, and we'll be recording everything. And I think if patients have a poor outcome, they should go to their MP and they should complain.
Well, hundreds of thousands of dollars in political donations from the Pharmacy Guild, we know that. And we should also say that your team at the RACGP and the AMA don't donate to political parties. So a bit of a stark difference there. I mean, their argument, the Pharmacy Guild, the business owners of those pharmacies, their argument is that, well, look at all these problems that you and I have just discussed in GPs. Surely patients should get access to some of these, well, just easier to walk into a pharmacy and get some of these problems diagnosed.
We've just had a GP summit and we've looked at the short-term issues. Obviously, we can't train doctors very quickly, but there are a lot of doctors from overseas who wish to come here, and we want to reduce that red tape, making sure the standards are acceptable. And there are a lot of doctors from the UK, Ireland and New Zealand who would wish to come in, and we want to speed up that process so that in the short term we can do it. We also know that the pharmacy industry has also got a shortage of pharmacists, and a lot of them are also staying in the hospital system for the same reason that the doctors are, because of the entitlements in state systems. So the pharmacy are not necessarily going to be in any better position to provide care in terms of a workforce distribution. But as I said, they're not qualified in many of the differential diagnoses that doctors do, and certainly not trained to the same extent. And that is a concern for patient safety, and that should be looked at very carefully by the public when it comes to any outcomes. And I would be most careful about what's happening with lobbying in our political landscape.
And a bit cheeky, isn't it, of the Pharmacy Guild to talk here about, well, because of this new pharmacy pilot going ahead, they're required to undergo a further 12 months of postgraduate level education and training. But it's not, it can be done over 12 months, but the actual time they spend learning and training to upskill, it's very, very small. It's not 12 months of full-time study.
No, it's sleight of hand. And the other issue is that people should understand that the Pharmacy Guild represents pharmacy owners. It doesn't represent the pharmacy worker bee, the managers. So they are in big business interests. And we have also had concerns ethically around this, because there's a really good reason why the person who writes a prescription does not benefit from the sale of that prescription. And yet here we have the Pharmacy Guild saying, well, we can do that and we can manage that conflict of interest. But, that's not proven anywhere. And we also know that pharmacists are allowed to own doctor surgeries, but doctors are not allowed to own pharmacies. So there's a whole lot of industry protection here that we think is concerning, given the conflicts of interest and what might happen to patient care.
Very well said. All right, there is a lot to unpack there. I don't envy you, Professor Price, because you are in a very, very challenging position.
We are trying to advocate for patients and trying to make sure we have standards and safety. We really like working with pharmacists. I love working with my local pharmacists, and we've got respected professions. And how about we fix the system rather than trying to fragment it with a very poor band-aid solution that threatens patient safety?
There you go. All right, we'll keep up the good fight, and certainly hoping that this new Albanese government pays more than just lip service to say that they support the GP sector. They actually need to listen to what the RACGP and the AMA and others are saying and address it, because, as you said, the outcomes for patients are only going to get worse going forward. Professor Karen Price, President of the Royal Australian College of GPs, thanks so much for your time on the King Review today.
Thanks very much. Take care.